Podcasts you love.
From people you trust. This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, September 17th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 284.
September 17th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:07, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. And good morning, everyone. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy on KFI. Time to talk high tech on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte is my name. I'd like to know yours. Give me a ring. Let's talk about this changing world of technology. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. That's my phone number. And tech means anything. It doesn't mean just computers and the internet. You know, there are, quote, tech shows in this very town that, for them, tech means Windows, period. And, you know, that's, sure, that's an important part of it, but there's so much more. So much more. There's, of course, Mac and Linux and other open source solutions, but there's also the internet, MP3s, cell phones, home theater, digital cameras, camcorders. There's even biotech, space tech, all of that. That's what tech is on this show. 1-800-520-1KFI. If it's changing our world, if it's got a chip in it, that's what we talk about. I did a biotech interview for one of my podcasts on Twit, and it was with a woman. I think she's at MIT. You might say, "What is there's no chips in biotech?" Yes, there are. It's kind of amazing. You know, if they want to test drugs, for instance, on humans, that, you know, that's a dangerous thing to do in a new drug. They wait until the drug is pretty heavily tested in every other form. But it's important nowadays, especially, to get these drugs out as quickly as possible. And so this woman is making artificial organs. She's using real human, say, liver cells or kidney cells or whatever, and putting them in a kind of a computer matrix with chips, very sophisticated chips that interface to biology, and making little machines that you can test drug interactions with. I mean, that's what we're working at this level. Amazing stuff. And the other reason it's kind of interesting is because it is among the first examples, although there are others, of human machine interfaces. You're starting to see that in prosthetic limbs, in things like cochlear implants for deafness. I mean, that's an amazing thing. It's a computer essentially simulating the human cochlea. It attaches to the nerves of the damaged part of the ear, and then the nerves of the brain. It feeds the brain signals, the kind of signals it would get from a working cochlea in the ear. The sounds are processed through the computer, turned into impulses the brain can understand, and it works. I've talked to people who've had cochlear implants, people who have been deaf from birth, who are hearing real sounds, who are hearing music for the first time, speech for the first time. And as far as we can tell, I mean, you can't get into their brain, but as far as we can tell, it's pretty close to the real thing. There are people who have lost their hearing later in life. Actually, they're a better test because they know what things are supposed to sound like. And to them, it sounds real. It's slightly different, but it sounds real. They can understand the speech. They can hear the music and enjoy it. So biotech is entering the world of information tech, the kind of tech that we normally talk about. I just think so. We can talk about that. 1-800-520-1KFI. We live in a very interesting world, and technology is changing every aspect of it. Even if you're not a computer head, a bit head, this show covers stuff you need to know. Your kids certainly are going to live in this world. You're living in this world. Everywhere you go, at work, at school, at church, at recreation, entertainment, it's all being changed dramatically. even the economics of this country and this and the Western world is being changed dramatically by technology. Sometimes it seems like when we talk about things like the iPod, it seems like, well, that's a trivial little bit of technology. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, of course it is. It's not changing the world. Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe it is changing the world. It's certainly changing how the music industry works. And when you're talking about video, it changes how somebody who wants to be a filmmaker might consider their career going forward. You don't have to fight a 20th Century Fox anymore if you want to sell your films and make a living as a filmmaker. So Microsoft has been watching Apple's success with the iPod, as have many companies, with great envy, gnashing of teeth, grinding their teeth at night, saying, what is Apple doing that we're not doing? Microsoft decided to assign the Xbox group, Jay Allard and his group, the people who have had the most success in the consumer marketplace, and I'm not talking about business, but consumer marketplace at Microsoft, to do a iPod killer. It will be called the Zune, Z-U-N-E. It will go on sale in the next couple of months in time for Christmas, for the holidays. It will be, we don't know what price, but best guesses are around $250 to $350. Right around what the iPod costs, right? That's why it's the best guess. And Microsoft released information about the Zune this week, so we now know more. It's a 30-gigabyte hard drive. Comes in black, white, and a color Apple would never consider. You know, Steve Jobs once said on a television documentary, the problem with Bill Gates is he has no taste. And in fact, Steve, I remember somebody told me, Steve called Bill to apologize. But at the end of the call, he said, but it's true. You don't have any taste. And maybe this is evidence. I don't know. Maybe it's the kind of thing they need to do to turn Apple on its ear. It's going to come in black and white. Those are colors iPods come in. And brown. Brown. I don't. Do you think that's the new black? Brown is the new black? I don't know. I'm a guy, so I'm not, you know, color sensitive, but maybe somebody who really gets color can tell me, oh, this is, yes, brown. Earth tones are the new thing for technology. I don't think so. There is some interesting stuff in here, some technology in here that is unique. You will be able to wirelessly share your music with other Zunes in the neighborhood. Now, this is something that PlayStation Portable has done with gaming. Nintendo DS has done with gaming to great effect, I think. Gamers love this idea. And it makes sense. Teenagers, young people might say, oh, hey, I just, you know, I have this, oh, this really great new song. You got to hear it. Here, let me send it to you. And I think the rule is you can play it for 3 days or three plays, whichever comes first. And then after that, you will be sent magically to the Zune store where you can purchase it. Well, makes sense. I mean, this is just a big ad, right? If it's a song everybody's listening to, everybody loves, you're going to buy it. The kids will buy it. Zune will play video, has a 3-inch screen, has a built-in FM radio. It will be able to share photos as well as playlists. It will come loaded with some music, including songs from a band called Hot Chip. Say that carefully. I think they're a British band. And there is some controversy over the Zune, and I'm not sure if people are reading this right. Microsoft's talked about what formats it would play. Conspicuously absent from this format list. And I don't know if this is oversight or they're saying something, is the Microsoft's own Play for Sure format, which is the format that lets you rent music at Yahoo or Rhapsody, and as long as you pay the monthly fee, you can continue to play it on a portable device. And a lot of portable devices are now plays for sure. Microsoft made a big push about a year ago, and a lot of devices. Unless they somehow crazily, and they haven't said anything about it, left this out of the press release, left this out of the press kits, forgot to mention it, it doesn't play Microsoft's own Plays for Sure format. It does something called the Zune Pass. So what it sounds like Microsoft's doing is it's undermining its, and this, they've done this before and it's really bad and dumb. They're undermining their own technology with a new competing technology to force you to buy the songsware from Microsoft and Microsoft alone. Toshiba will make it. Price and availability are still not clear. And now, according to Zune's manager of global marketing, they're going to do a Zune phone. This is something people have been begging for Apple to do, for an iPod phone. And I don't know if Apple will ever get into this, but Microsoft says they're going to do a Zune phone too. Same ideas, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, sharing music, and it'll have a phone in it. That's the kind of thing you have to do, frankly, if you're Microsoft and you're trying to unseat the iPod. The thing you shouldn't do and the thing they're stupid to do and I can't believe they're doing is not supporting their own copy protection. Copy protection is the bane of all this stuff, and I know you can't do one of these things successfully and without copy protection. But boy, now you can put your own music on there. It doesn't, not all them, you know, you can put MP3s and stuff you rip yourself or even stuff you steal yourself. Go on there and play fine. But Microsoft's own copy protected plays for sure music. No, won't work. That's crazy. Let's talk about it or anything else on your mind having to do with technology. 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1117.
Matt Drudge.
They're fighting over such minutia in Washington these days. We have an illegal invasion from Mexico. We've got our taxes through the roof. We've got abortion through the roof. We've got now murders going at $15,000 a year. And we're sitting here fighting about a Valerie plane.
Matt Drudge. Tonight, 7 to 10 on AM 640.
Live online.
KFI, AM640.com.
Folks, if you don't have high speed, forget the Zune, forget the iPod. I mean, that's how you buy music online nowadays. I guess you could buy with dial-up, but it sure take a long time. You couldn't go look at videos on YouTube. You couldn't download movies. High-speed internet is the wave of the future. If you're still in the 20th century and you'd like to get into the 21st, and you thought you couldn't afford it, you can. High-speed internet for the lowest price I've ever seen. I think it's the lowest price for DSL in the country. $12.95 a month only from DSL Extreme. Now, DSL Extreme is great. They're my internet service provider, so I'm telling you that they know what they're doing. They're good people. They offer anti-spam at the server side, which I highly recommend, antivirus. They have a firewall for you. Great service. And listen, this is the price. It's $12.95. It's guaranteed for a year or longer. There's no setup fee. The modem is free. The tech support is free. I mean, that's it. There's no strings attached. $12.95 a month. Get rid of your second line and go high speed with DSL Extreme. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet right now. 866-2-GETNET. Or you can visit them online at DSLExtreme.com. High speed internet for the lowest price in the country. Guaranteed. 1-866, the number 2, GetNet to get DSL Extreme.
Just because it's the weekend doesn't mean you gotta get stupid. More stimulating weekends.
In the name of love, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. I'm going to be talking at Podcast Expo, actually giving the keynote at Podcast Expo in Ontario, coming up on September 29th. I'd love you to come by. Go to podcastexpo.com for more information to sign up. My keynote is 9 in the morning on the September 29th, and then that afternoon, we did the radio show from there last year, but I don't think I'll do that again this year. I will do a podcast from there. We'll have a large podcast set up at a stage in the exhibit hall, I think at 2 o'clock Friday afternoon. Come by and say hi. And actually, if you're in the area, you might want to check out the day before Podcast Academy, which is an event I've spoken at before. If you're interested in podcasting, you want to learn more about podcasting, Podcast Academy is really great. Put on by the folks who do IT Conversations. It's podcastacademy.com, September 28th. It's the day before the Podcast Expo. Now, you have to register for that. I think that's $199, and it's filling up. So if you're interested in that, podcastacademy.com and then podcastexpo.com for the trade show. If you're interested in learning about podcasting, not as a listener, but more as a podcaster, those are two big events. and I'll be speaking at both of them. Let's get to the phones. Ethan, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Ethan.
Hi, Leo. My question is about Google AdSense.
Yes, sir.
And I have an unhosted web page, and I was wondering if I could get some trial AdSense code just to get it all formatted and stuff before I put my page online.
Well, the way AdSense works is you won't even be able to do it until you have a website and they approve you.
So, okay.
It's not something you can just do. Let me explain what AdSense is for people who are curious about that. It is Google's, I think, very nifty system for letting people put ads on their blogs. You know, for a while, they weren't doing it on personal pages so much, and I think that they've eased up quite a bit on that. But you make more money, frankly, if a personal page, if you don't have a lot of traffic, you may not make a lot of money. The way it works is, and I'm sure you've been, everybody's been to these pages, my page. If you go to leo.am, you'll see it. That's we use Google Ads on leo.am right at the top. Ads by Google. There are different ways of doing it. Mine is just a little line with some words. That's the least obtrusive. There can be banner ads. You get to say how you want to format it, what colors you want it to be. You can even say what sites you don't want to advertise. What Google does is they index your contents, and this is why it won't work until you're online, Ethan. They index your contents, and they say, a lot of conversations there about, on my page, cruising. We're going to put some ads about going on cruises there. I wish they did a better job. You'll notice if you, if you go to my pages, if they did a better job, you'd see, I think, a broader variety of links. You see the word blog, and they go crazy, and there are all these blog links. And, my pages, the KFI show notes are not a blog, and I don't think anybody's going to click those ads. So I'm not completely thrilled with Google AdSense. On the other hand, I do make probably $700 to $1,000 a month, which is certainly enough to pay the hosting bill. And I bet you'd be happy with that much, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
better than a job delivering newspapers.
Yeah.
Let me give you a couple of hints. First of all, you can't apply to it until you have a website, because they actually check and see.
Okay.
So wait until you have a website. Apply then. The other thing is, there's different kinds of AdSense, and there are all sorts of different ways to play with it. You can try different positioning on the page. They give you some good advice on that. And the thing that's the most lucrative for me is not the AdSense at the top of the page, but the search. If you on the left, if you scroll down and you see that search and you type in a search, let's say you type in Nikon because you're interested. Oh, did Leo talk about any Nikon cameras? Mm-hmm. You'll see right away that it is a Google served page with a bunch of Nikon ads at the top. Those get a lot of clicks. Because if you're searching for Nikon and you you might read my pages, but then you're going to look at those prices as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's very effective.
Okay. May I ask you one more question?
Yeah, sure.
My dad has a laptop that every so often the screen, it looks as if the input's kind of coming half unplugged, where you see like lines, but everything gets weird.
Yeah.
But then when you restart it, it fixes it. So I can't figure out if it's like software or a hardware error.
Yeah, it could be software. Yeah. You certainly should try updating your video drivers, but I gotta tell you, Ethan, a lot of times on laptops you'll see that kind of thing because the ribbon cable that connects the screen to the main machine is in that hinge. Mm-hmm. And if it's as the laptop gets older and that hinge is the lid's been open and closed a lot, that can start to fray. And sometimes it's just that. Now, if it's just that, it's actually a fairly cheap fix. They replace the ribbon cable and it's not expensive. But I would first try. It also could be software. You see that on desktops too sometimes, and it's often the video driver. So
okay.
I would certainly replace the video driver first and try to get the software working first. But it could also be just a frayed cable in the lid. Good luck with your website, Ethan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. I'm told brown is in. It's the new fashion color. So maybe Zune is not. Would you buy a brown MP3 player? I wouldn't. 1129 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. We'll talk more about this in just a second. 1-800-520-1KFI. But right now, Deborah Mark is in the KFI News Center.
It's a four-hour jolt of auditory espresso. Bill Handel, the best cup of Joe in town.
KFI AM 640.
Mm. 1138. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. And Mike's call screener says she would love a brown Zune. I don't know. Okay. This will be very interesting. Maybe, you know, obviously, Microsoft's not stupid. They're not going to release a brown MP3 player unless somebody wants one. And maybe they, you know, maybe they, you know, they checked out the fashionistas. And the fashionistas said, oh, please, brown. Brown's the new black. I want one. But that's, you know, come on, really? You think? Black, white, and brown. I bet you they sell like 1% brown. But just my guess, but we'll see. Obviously, you know, Microsoft probably knows a lot more than I do about this kind of thing. Becky, you're Belinda, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Becky.
Hi. I have a problem with my PC. When the last program I have used, I will close down. I'll have all the programs closed down. And when I come back to the PC, frequently that last program is opened up and on my desktop again.
Oh, you closed it.
I did close it.
You closed it, but it comes back.
Mm-hmm. And the first couple times I thought I was a little nuts.
What is the program that keeps coming back?
It's an accounting program, but I've had it happen with
other programs.
Print Artist, yeah. I do have a remote access on that computer. Is it possible that someone is opening those for me?
Yeah, it's possible, but why? That seems a strange thing to do. You'd have to have them logged in. You'd probably see that they were logged in as well. So that seems unlikely. Much more, you know, if somebody's hacking your system, the last thing they want to do is kind of announce it to you by doing it.
So they couldn't, it wouldn't be something that would prevent them from closing it out after they had done that?
I'm trying to think of why it would reopen. You're sure it closed, right?
Oh, absolutely. This has been going on for months.
Months. So how do you close your programs?
I just go up to the little corner and click the X.
You go to the upper right-hand corner and you click the X.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're not actually closing the program. You're just closing the window. So the program is actually still running.
It's still running in the background?
Yeah. You're just closing the window. In order to close the program, you want to go to the program. It depends on the program, of course, but typically you'll want to go to the File menu.
Okay.
In the program and select exit.
Okay.
Merely closing the window closes your active window, but the program continues to run.
Well, what would make the active window pop up again?
Oh, lots of different things. Maybe the program says, we've got an update for you, or lots of different things. I think you're not closing it. So what? If you actually go to File and select exit, if you actually shut the program down and you don't, and there's, you know, one way to tell is to hit Control Alt Delete. This is Windows XP in 2000, not Windows 95. That's not a good idea in Windows 95, but that will just reset your machine, or 98 or SE. But in Windows XP, Control-Alt-Delete will show you a list of running applications. You want to make sure it's not in that list, that you really have closed it. Closing the window, I'm sorry to say, does not actually close the program. Kirk in St. Louis, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Kirk.
Yes, Leo. I had a question about running TrueCrypt inside of Parallels on a MacBook Pro.
Oh, how interesting. Now, there's an interesting combination.
Well, I love
that. That makes sense. TrueCrypt is a great program, unfortunately, Windows only.
Right. I'm waiting for that OS X version.
Oh, I'd love that. And it's open source, so I bet you somebody will work on that. But it's an encryption program that is just not to be beaten. And because it's open source, you know it's reliable. It does a great job, has a lot of nice features. But it's not available on OS X. Now, there are other things on OS X, including OS X's own built-in encryption. But I am kind of with you. I like to have third-party open-source encryption so I know there's no backdoor and I know exactly what's going on.
Right. And I've been using it on Windows for a long time.
It should run just fine in Parallels.
Well, it runs fine. I was just curious, since that Windows hard drive is really just a file on the Mac, am I getting the same level of encryption
yes.
as I would...
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's encrypted within that. So there, it depends on. Yes, the answer is yes. But how it appears to the outside user will depend on what you're doing with TrueCrypt. You know, you can have it be completely random data. You can have it be a file that looks like something normal. It'll appear to anybody who looks at it the same exact way as it would appear to you in Windows. So if they if they look at that image file and they analyze it, to analyze it, you really have to almost, it's as if you're mounting it. So the data is scrambled in there, and they won't see any file system until they mount it. And when they mount it, it'll look exactly as it does in Windows.
Okay, great. That's what I wanted to know.
It's a great program. Yeah, TrueCrypt.org, TrueCrypt.org. People often ask me about encryption protection. You know, that's scrambling the data so no one can see it. And it's just, the answer is very simple in Windows. TrueCrypt. The reason is it first of all, as I said, very important, I think. Oh, they have Linux too, by the way. It's just Mac they don't have. Very important to have an open source encryption program. So, of course, Windows has its own encryption. Mac has its own encryption. But they're not open source. They're made by those companies. And now I'm not paranoid, but I can look at TrueCrypt, or an expert can look at TrueCrypt and say, okay, there's no back door. There's nothing in here. There's no way a government agency or anybody could unencrypt this stuff without the passphrase. We can't do that with Macintosh encryption or Windows encryption. They're not open source. So that means, let's say, a government body, the NSA, goes to Redmond and Cupertino and says, guys, you know, we've got a real terrorist problem here. We're really afraid of terrorists using your encryption to hide secret terrorist stuff. We just ask you to provide a secret backdoor password for governmental agencies. It'll never be used without approval from the FISA court, that secret court. Or if, you know, President Bush feels like it. But other than that, it'll never be used. And I could absolutely see any corporation, it's hard to say no, saying yes. I just, hard to say no when the NSA comes a-knocking. And you have no way of verifying that. So if you really want encryption, I mean real encryption that nobody can get into but you, it's, you've got to do it open source. There's other issues as well. What if the company goes out of business? Stop supporting it. I mean, there are lots of issues. Open source is the only safe way to go. TrueCrypt happens to be implemented beautifully. If you want to know more about TrueCrypt, Steve Gibson, our security expert on Twit, did a very good, I think, podcast on this in his Security Now podcast. So I recommend, you know, I'm not going to go into great detail on how wonderful TrueCrypt is, except to say it is wonderful. Learn about it if you want strong encryption. Things like plausible deniability, which means, I mean, this thing is so secure. You can, if somebody looks on your hard drive, you know, with a lot of encryption, they look on your hard drive, they say, what's that? There's something encrypted there. Give us the password. And, or we're going to throw you in jail. Or we're going to cut your throat, or we're going to put a hood over your head and put you on terrorist TV, or whatever it is you're worried about. With TrueCrypt, there you can't see there's anything there. There's nothing there. It's random data. They can't say, look, I see something. But if you want more, you can have it look like an innocuous MP3 file. It goes on and on and on. Security Now, episode 41. So if you go to twit.tv/SN41. If you want to know all about it, you can listen there. twit.tv/SN41. Now, there's no point in me belaboring it because Steve does such a good job and he's an expert. But it's just, if you're going to encrypt, that's the way to go. And because it's open source, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody comes along with a Mac version. Now, OS X is based on BSD, which is an open source, you know, Unix based operating system. So there are TrueCrypt like very powerful, very good encryption options for OS X that you can use from the command line. But it's a little harder to use, a little trickier. You need to know what you're doing more. And I think really there's nothing quite as good as TrueCrypt. So I just urge, if any Mac developers are listening, port it, please, over to OS X. We'd appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:47.
Dr. Dean Adel, this afternoon at 2.
KFI, AM 640.
11:54, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On KFI, 1-800-520-1. KFI is the phone number. Mark Santa Ana. Welcome.
Hey.
Hey, Mark.
By the way, if I can ask a second question, I'll tell you why brown.
Oh, good. I'd love to hear why brown.
Because most, what is it, stereo cabinetry?
Is brown?
Well, a lot of it, the retro, is nice and brown.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, you mean like wood, like wooden?
Yes, wood. So if you want, you know, like how all these, the iPods have that extra cabinetry to make it look like a hi-fi stereo
yeah,
at
so
home.
So it'll
plug
blend
it
in with your wooden, your Macintosh amp.
Right.
M-C-I-N-T-O-S-H. Huh, interesting. I never thought about that. Maybe that's why. But it's still going to be plastic. It's not wood. It's round plastic.
But still, they
yeah,
can
it would look
it.
Better. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they can surround most of it.
Do you think it'd be wood grain? Plastic?
Why not? Because, I mean, think
make
about
it burl.
I know my wife complains bitterly about all
right.
the electronics that we have,
right.
and it's just this harsh, dark black.
No, I agree with you. I think that's an interesting point. I would say it's almost undoubtedly to get women to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I haven't seen any brown MP3 players yet. Well, this will be very interesting. I must be off base then, because... to me, brown just doesn't sound attractive. It's like, you know, let's make it lime green. I mean, what? Ew,
yeah,
what would you buy? What would you buy?
I'm just bad.
We're guys. We don't care.
Yeah. Well, that and I don't have them.
You don't even have it.
No, I just bought a Lionel Richie CD. I'm still playing CDs. I mean,
he's
you know, you're
once,
talking to a guy who bought the best
twice,
of Lionel Richie yet last night.
Three times a loser. Okay, what can I do? Well, now we know what we're talking to. Now we know the ground we're operating on, Mark. I'm just teasing you.
I was raised in the 80s.
Me too. I know what you mean.
So, anyhow. Okay, my first question is, I have... Oh, now you've completely got me.
Well, you were going to ask about memory cards, it says.
Thank
up here.
You. Yes. I'm going to take your advice. I called a couple weeks ago, and you said, get the Fujitsu E900. So
yes.
I did some reading online. And then they started saying things like, don't get the 1 gig SD card or the XD card because it slows the
I have a 1 gig
down.
Card. It has not been in my experience that it slows the camera down.
Okay. And then they also said, get the, what is it, the H card instead of the M card.
The real question is, how fast is the camera? Now, if somebody reliable is testing the camera and saying, yes, it's capable of using the high-speed cards, then it might be worth it in terms of... Here's where you get an advantage is in the rapid shooting, right? So the way all of these cameras work is when you use the... I call it motor wind because it's like the old cameras, motor wind. We go, gee, 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 keeps taking pictures. It always takes those to a buffer in memory. The card is not fast enough to save directly to the card. So it fills up that buffer and then saves to the card. Now, if your card is really fast and the camera is capable of writing that fast, many cameras are not, well, that buffer will clear out faster. You'll be able to do gee, 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 some more. But really, you're limited mostly in the terms of the size of that memory buffer. You know, on like the E900, where you're taking giant images, it's a 9-megapixel camera. Your images are so huge, you only can get four images in the buffer before it fills. So even all a fast card means is it'll recover faster. It doesn't mean you'll be able to take more pictures.
Okay. No, I didn't think that, but I...
It does recover, and it would recover faster. I find it writes very fast. One of the reasons they use XD is because it's a faster medium.
And then last question on the cards. Should I get, because they were talking, get the Olympus instead of the Fujitsu. What is your...
Who are you reading?
I was reading Amazon stuff. There were some people who said, be careful putting the cards in kiosks, get the H instead of the M cards, and get the Olympus instead of the Fujitsu.
I generally trust those reviews. Those are real people using the cards. As long as you're pretty sure it's not an Olympus rep. Saying get the Olympus.
Right.
I have Olympus XD and I have SanDisk XD. I usually buy, is it SanDisk? I have to look in my camera now. I'm not sure which. But I haven't noticed a big difference. I think if it's not hugely expensive, then I would trust them. But if it's $100 difference, don't do it.
No, they're about the prices are all about the same.
Yeah. So then, it's no harm doing it. And I generally trust those Amazon reviews because those are people using the thing in the field.
Right.
I always read them. And certainly if two people say it, it's true.
Okay. Second question.
Hold on.
No problem.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll talk to you. Well, keep on the line, though, because I will take your call right after the news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I promised him. It's 11:59, and let's head to the KFI News Center where Lisa Osborne has the latest.
September 17th, 2006.
KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 12:06. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. 12:07 now. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, their tech guy, here till 2 in the Dr. Dana Dell Show. Phone number is 1-800-520-1KFI. We've been chatting away here, talking about technology. Mark in Santa Ana wanted a second question, and he gets one because he mentioned Brown. I just was looking in my E900, Mark, and I have a Fujifilm memory, and that's probably just because that's what Amazon sold, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know if...
One gig,
yeah. And I have another 1 gig, so I have 2 1-gigs. I don't, you know, boy, I don't know. Not having used anything better or faster, I don't know if it could perform much better. And that's the issue. What you really probably want to do is go somewhere like camcorderinfo.com and see how fast the camera is. If it's, you can buy memory that's faster than the camera. In fact, often do.
You've already answered my question. My point of wanting fast is simply because my daughter, when we take pictures of her, she has this innate sense of turning. You know, when
she
you
scuttles.
Sneak up on her. So when I click that button, I want that picture
right.
taken immediately.
That's not going to speed that up. That has nothing to do with that. That's totally internal to the camera.
Right. When you said the camera has the buffer, then that was it.
And that's for the motor one. I mean, just for the what we call shutter lag, which is the time between the time you press the picture, the button, and the time the picture is taken. That is really how the camera is made. Modern, the more modern point and shoots are pretty quick.
Correct.
SLRs are instant. You know, you spend a lot more money, but they're instant, much more like a regular film camera. But I've even, you know, certainly the Fuji films, the FinePix, either the F10, the first one I had, or the E900, the one I replaced it with, both are almost instantaneous. And what I like about them for taking pictures of kids is the turn-on time is very quick, too.
As you've noticed, it
extends its little thing really quickly.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to decide which of the three questions. I'll pick this.
Waited on hold long enough. I could take a little more. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. The thing is that I have a computer that's startup, or its settings for one of the logins has just gone bluey this morning.
Uh-oh, that's bad.
The other one is fine. The other one comes up. Nod 32 comes up. The camera,
XP?
You know. XP, yeah.
And so what happens? When it comes up, you don't get a login or you get...
Oh, no, I get a login, but the screen is just the blue and...
It looks funny.
Yeah, it looks empty.
Check.
Like there's only 3 icons on the desktop.
Oh, when you log in, is it normal?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't complain. It doesn't have any errors. It just simply is missing stuff. Like I don't have my bookmarks, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I see. Actually, after you've logged in, you don't have everything.
Yeah, I log in, and the screen doesn't have the normal Sony VAIO background. It's just a bluish, you know, that bluish whatever screen, and it only has 3 icons. And
so you probably, it sounds like you it is either a new default account. That's kind of the blank account. Or your settings got messed up somewhere, or maybe somehow you're pointing to a different documents and settings folder.
Right.
Because that's what it is. It's a default account, right? It's got the kind of, you know, the stuff you would have if you had a brand new user.
Right. Like it's only pointing to the all user stuff.
Yeah. I'm not sure why that would happen suddenly. Anybody else, like your daughter, use that computer?
No.
I'm not sure why that would happen suddenly. Sounds like it's pointing to a new login. I don't know why.
Right, and only the 2 show up, and when I go to the other one, it's fine.
Huh.
Is there any...
Well, look, what you want to do is go open the Documents and Settings folder. It's in the C directory, wherever your Windows is stored. Usually that's C. Inside the Windows folder, look at Documents and Settings, and then if you open that up, you should have a list of all your logins on that system.
Right.
Including the one that's not behaving properly. I would investigate that folder. First of all, see what the creation date of that folder is and the modification date of that folder. Maybe look inside and see if the favorites are there. If they're there, then there's something screwy going on.
Okay, I'll do that.
And of course, you have... Yeah, that's a good idea. If you have SpinWrite, then you undoubtedly have all the appropriate antivirus and anti-spyware stuff. So
not 32.
Yeah, sometimes spyware can do strange things like that, but I don't think you sound like you're the kind of guy who has spyware, so...
No.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know what... You know, Windows is sometimes a great mystery.
Okay. Can I ask you one last?
Yeah, sure.
Yes or no question?
Yes.
I've got an old...
Okay, that's one. Okay, one more.
Okay. You're good. I have a... Honest to God, it's my high school history teacher, and he has old Macs, and he wants to keep those old Macs. I want to make sure we don't lose his old disks, like System 9 and,
right.
And all that stuff. So, but I'm not that familiar with Macs, and so...
Are they floppies or CDs?
They're CDs.
Oh, they'll be fine. You could make a duplicate of them. You could
can
even
I
do
make
it
a duplicate on my IBM machine
you
with
sure
Nero,
can.
Or do I have to do it on
nope.
the Mac?
You can do it on any machine at all.
Okay, that's great.
Standard ISO CDs. They're completely like any other. Kevin, Lake Gregory, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi there.
Hey, thanks for your patience.
You're welcome. Leo, I listened to you on Amber Mac and Twit TV. And,
oh, thank you. Those are my podcasts, and Amber is my co-host in Canada who just quit and is going to the big time. She's going to a big Canadian network. So I'm wishing her well. You know, it's happened to me so many times. I'm the old guy. The young ones come along. I teach them everything I know. Then they go off. Erica Hill went to CNN. Michaela went to KTLA. That's just what happens.
That's what happens.
They leave me in the dust because they're beautiful, young, and talented, and I'm just some old guy who knows about computers.
And that's what happens to me anyway. But anyway, I just bought a widescreen ViewSonic display. I had a CRT before. And I had bought this video card when I bought it. I knew the next thing was going to be a digital
right.
DVI link. And when I have multiple operating systems on here because I've gotten Ubuntu. I'm totally happy with that.
Which, by the way, is brown. Somebody pointed
right.
out in the chat room. That's the predominant color of Ubuntu, the new Linux.
I would not buy a brown music
brown.
Player.
Ugh. I don't want to call it the color that everybody's thinking, but that's the color it is. And I just don't understand it, really. All right.
No, I would definitely go against brown.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I tested my wife's display on here. But here's what the problem is that I don't get any of the bootloader menus or the post-op menus, and you need that if you have multiple operating systems. So, but it works on analog. And then
yeah.
I tried her display, and it works fine.
Right.
And I put this monitor with my new...
So here's the deal. Here's the deal. On that machine, you have a built-in motherboard video as well as the new card you've added. Right? Did you pull out a video card?
No.
No. So there's no. still an old, the old connector you used to use, the old VGA connector is still there.
Oh, well, no, I used the video card that I had plugged in, the AGP. It's an AGP motherboard.
You took out the old AGP card and put in the new video card?
No. At some point I did, yes. I did, yeah.
Okay.
I put a new...
See, here's what's,
I was using my CRT for a long, long, long
right.
time.
Right, here's what's happening. The scan settings for the monitor, until it boots into the operating system, are invisible to that new monitor. Now, there's one possibility, which I thought might be going on. If you have motherboard video, the way the computers often boot is they'll put all that other stuff out to the motherboard video until it sees... He's using the new video card, and then it switches over.
That's what I thought you had,
because that's very common when you have two video cards in a system. It pumps it out the analog card until it sees the digital card as part uh-huh. of the boot system. That's what's going on. It's not sending the signal out yet to
yeah.
the digital. Now, it's not a warm-up issue, right? I mean, it's...
No. I tested her monitor with this card, and I get post-op, and I...
And
I
she has a LCD, or she has...
LCD, yes, and I put this LCD...
Is it on the... It's a DVI LCD?
DVI, yes.
Okay.
It's a Sony Vaio, and I put this one on that one, and I get post-op and everything, and hers gets post-op. It's just this...
It's the ViewSonic. It's something about the ViewSonic.
That's what I'm thinking is something with the monitor. Because if the card's working one way, it should work on another.
Yeah, but you got this widescreen monitor that has different refresh rates, right? So
yeah.
I think what's happening is it's putting out... Because remember that you're not seeing a GUI screen until after this. This is just the plain old 60 hertz...
Yeah, I don't see anything till Windows comes up. I have to
right,
guess
exactly.
which screen is Windows.
Exactly.
I have to use down arrows.
I think what's happening It's kind of the what you want to do is output generic VGA to the DVI connector, and so that it can see all this generic VGA stuff, including the boot manager. And then when your operating system boots, it'll switch over to this higher resolution. The ViewSonic's not seeing the generic VGA for some reason. Maybe it can't handle it. More likely, there's a setting somewhere. When I'm going to have to ask somebody to help out on this because I haven't seen this happen before. I've seen it happen with dual motherboard, you know, with dual video cards on a motherboard. And that's a simple BIOS fix. But I'm not sure why your ViewSonic's not seeing the generic 60 hertz 640 by 480 output. That's what it needs to see. Somebody has a ViewSonic widescreen and knows, I'd love to hear about it. 1-800-520-1KFI or go to our chat room. That's hot and heavy right now. 100 people in there. It's just go to irc.dslextreme.com. That's the webpage. It'll explain all that you need to know to get in there. And, of course, the show notes, too, is another good place to go. I'm going to turn the comments on in the show notes right now. And that is KFIAM640.com. Click my name, Leo Laporte, under the shows. And you will want to select the official website on my page on KFI's site. You just go to leo.am. That might be easier. And this is, of course, Sunday's show, 284. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio, 1218 now.
KFI News, fueled by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI, AM 640.
AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1224. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hope you'll join me at Podcast Expo. It's coming up in Ontario, September 29th and 30th, podcastexpo.com. There's also a link in the show notes. And I'll be there a day early, too, on the 28th for Podcast Academy. I'm doing the keynote at Podcast Expo, but I'll do a lecture on how TWIT happened the day before on Thursday, the 28th. TWIT is my podcast network. Silly little thing called TWIT. Mike Fontana, KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hey, Mike.
Hey there, Leo. Good afternoon.
Thanks for hanging on. Good afternoon to you.
I have a BlackBerry Pearl.
Oh, how exciting. First of all, you've got to review it for us. This is the brand new one, the 8100, right?
Yes, 8100 using T-Mobile service.
Okay.
I like it a lot. I'm using email. I'm using web browsing.
Now, had you used a BlackBerry before?
I have. Not to the degree I'm using the 8100.
So you had used the BlackBerry, the traditional BlackBerry keyboard. This is my question for you. The 7100 and now the 8100 have this new keypad that's more like a phone pad. And I'm used to BlackBerry's traditional QWERTY keyboard. So how does it compare?
Well, I love Nokia cell phones. So I'm very versed with T9.
And so you're using T9 a lot, huh?
Right. So it's really, if you start staring at the words as you're typing, you're going to be like, oh my God, what's it typing?
But and then all of a sudden, you have to have faith.
You have to have To BlackBerry's credit, they do have an extensive dictionary embedded already, and it does learn.
So it's T9-like. The way T9 works, folks, for those who haven't used it yet, it's a way to make it easier to type words using your 0 through 9 telephone keypad. As everybody knows, a 1 is, or the 2, I guess, is A, B, C, C, the 3 is D, E, F. So you start typing, but instead of typing 2-3 times to get the letter C, you just type as if you're hitting the letter C, and T9, by the time you get to the end of the word, usually can figure out what the word is. So that's how the BlackBerry is working. You just type as if you're typing those letters, and it just kind of, by the end of the word, goes, oh, you either meant robot or French fries, and then you would choose one or the other, right?
Yes, that's correct. And then unlike any other predecessor BlackBerry, this has a little trackball in the middle rather than the thumb wheel on the side.
See, I'm a big thumb wheel fan, but I've heard from people that the trackball is okay.
I like the trackball a lot. I think it's much easier to use,
okay,
and more responsive than the wheel.
Okay. I'm going to have to take a look at it. I think because I love BlackBerry, but of course your traditional BlackBerry is a weird phone because it's more like a PDA than a phone, and it's weird holding it to your ear. This one looks more like a phone.
Yes, it does.
All right. Thanks for the mini review. Now you may ask your. I'm very curious about this, and I may have to try one. What can I do for you though?
Well, quick background. I'm using MacBook Pro running Parallels. I love it. Works great. What I'm looking for is a BlackBerry management application until something like Pocket Mac supports the Pearl.
Pocket Mac does not yet support the Pearl, huh?
According to the website, it's coming, but as of yet, it does not. It supports the MacBook Intels if you're using an older BlackBerry.
Right, but it doesn't support the new BlackBerries. Yeah, I got it.
Correct.
Well, of course, there is the BlackBerry's own management application, but that only runs in Windows.
Right.
So you could use that.
Interestingly enough, though, I'm sorry, it does not run under Parallels, though. I get a quirky error message saying that there's not enough.
USB. That is a known problem with Parallels, but the new version, which is in beta right now and is due out any minute now, supposedly fixes those USB issues.
Oh, okay, cool.
You're using USB for it?
Yes.
Yeah. Supposedly those issues are fixed. So look for the new Parallels. It's any minute now.
Okay.
And if you haven't upgraded to the beta, you can. If you already paid for Parallels, you can start using the beta. That actually, I'd be very interested. It's supposed to fix it. Let me know if it does or doesn't.
Yeah, I definitely will. I'll do a quick shout out to Shuby.
Let
him know.
I don't know. The only, as far as I know, Mac application that talks to BlackBerry, in fact, it's one that BlackBerry ships, is Pocket Mac.
Correct.
And that's it. I don't know of anything else that works. And it doesn't work all that well, but at least it works.
Exactly.
I don't know of anything else. I think you're out of luck. There are a few, and this is one of the real downsides to being a Mac user is, until recently, there was no BlackBerry support. Then Pocket Mac came along. But often, you know, syncing with phones and other devices is troublesome on the Mac. Everybody makes their thing work for Windows. Few do for the Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:29. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Hate that behind the eight ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. More stimulating weekends.
KFI, AM 640.
12:39 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Dr. Dean coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, here till then. This show is saved on the show notes page, as all of the shows have been, going way back almost 3 years now to January 2004. That's a total of 283 shows. Still a little behind on the ones I was gone on the cruise for. But we're editing those up, and we'll get those up. And I say we because I now have somebody working on the editing for me, which is very nice. Thank you, Dane. We're editing those, and we'll get them up probably the next day or so. So we'll be all caught up. You get there by going to KFIAM640.com, hovering your mouse over the shows menu, and you'll see my name, Leo Laporte. If you're listening live, you'll see my picture. You can just click that. And then when you get to the Leo page on KFI's site, under my picture, that smiling picture, there's a link to the official website, and that takes you to leo.am, where all of this stuff is. There's audio archives. You can even subscribe to a podcast, so you can just get the shows automatically as soon as they come out. One of a dozen podcasts I do, and I'm really happy to say, and this is the first official announcement, we're going to launch a Windows podcast this Friday. Because Vista's, you know, imminent. I think, you know, I've been putting it off. I don't really like talking about beta software, but I think Vista is now solid. The release candidates are as close as you're going to get to the final version. So it's time to start talking about Vista. We haven't named it yet. I want to name it Countdown to Vista, but then what happens when Vista comes out in a couple of years? No, I'm just kidding. We need a new name. So Paul Thurrott is going to do it, who is, I think, the best Windows guy out there. The secret of the success of my podcast is not that I host them, but I choose really good people to do it for me. Paul and I will be hosting together. Paul is he works for Windows IT Pro magazine, but his site, winsupersite.com, WINSUPERSITE.com, is a fantastic site, part of Windows IT Pro. And reviews, he talks about his opinion. One of the things I like about him, even though he is an expert on Windows and covers Windows better than anybody, he is very honest. And when Microsoft stumbles, he'll say so. He doesn't hesitate to criticize, and yet he's also very knowledgeable, very good. So Paul Thurrott will be the host of our new Windows Vista podcast, and that will debut at twit.tv, twit.tv on Friday. I'm excited about that. We'll get Paul on the show, too, to give us a review of Vista RC1. He just did a marvelous multi-page review of the newest release candidate. Chris, Los Angeles, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Welcome, Chris.
Hi. I have a question for you. My father is going completely deaf. Is not a candidate for any cochlear implant or anything like that. We're looking for something that would be portable that might translate speech into text for him.
Yeah.
Do you know anything like that?
These are very specialized programs, and while I do know the name of a number of them, I'm not sure what the best would be for him. He uses Windows?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And we tried putting Dragon onto a laptop, but that didn't work out.
Well, that's a little different. That's actually speech to... That's for dictation. Is that what you mean? He wants a dictation software?
No, he was looking for something that somebody could speak into and translate it into text.
Because somebody's going to be talking to him, and he wants to see it on the screen.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think Dragon's actually, of all the consumer, I don't know of any anything better than Dragon, let's put it that way.
Is there any way to get it onto a laptop or something like that?
Oh, it should work fine on a laptop. It's Dragon Naturally Speaking.
Right.
The name of the program. Version 9 just came out, and it's worth, you know, getting the latest, because it is a little bit better than the, they're slowly improving. It's from Nuance, NUANCE.com. And the problem with it is it's designed... It's not what they call speaker neutral. It's designed for one person to dictate to. So it's really to eliminate typing. It's not designed for your dad to hold up the microphone to somebody while they talk to him and have it tell him what they're saying. It will do that, but it'll do it with mistakes. Because it's not been trained for that voice, some people it'll work better than other people. Some people it won't work at all for. But it should install on a laptop. It likes having more memory. It's faster. And this is another thing you'll see, is it does not keep up with the speech. So, I mean, it does a decent job, but your speakers will have to notice what's going on and pause while Dragon is putting it up on the screen.
Okay.
It's not really designed to do what you're doing, and that's the thing. I don't know exactly what's out there. This is called adaptive or assistive technologies, and I'm not sure what's out there specifically for deafness. It's an interesting question. I haven't seen anything like that, but there are places like the Center, the Independent Resource Living Center, and places like that where they might be able to help you with this stuff.
Okay.
I would check around for support groups. But Dragon is the best. I mean, of the consumer grade dictation software, there's nothing even close.
Okay.
So how old is the laptop?
We tried putting it on a laptop, but since they couldn't download it onto the laptop, we got a refund for the laptop we were going to buy.
Oh, I see. Yeah. What did it say when it wouldn't install?
I don't know. It was...
It's supposed to work just fine on a laptop.
Yeah, we had one of the stores try and put it on there for us first.
Oh, okay. And they said, it won't work?
Yeah, they said it wouldn't go on. And I called the company. I called
it works
Nuance,
fine.
And they said that there was nothing that would go onto a laptop, that it always had to be on a PC.
What do you mean a PC? I use it on a laptop all the time. What are they talking about?
I don't know. I called the company, and they said that there's no way it would go on a laptop.
You mean a Mac?
No.
A Windows laptop?
Mm-hmm. They said that
I use it on a laptop all the time. I know many people use it. I don't know. I'm baffled now. Dragon Naturally Speaking 9.
They said it won't work
on a laptop?
They said that if you do use it on the laptop, you have to actually put it back on the PC to have it translate.
No, that's not true. I don't know who
that's
you were talking
true.
To. No,
okay.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk. I don't know what they're talking about. My good friend David Pogue, the writer for the New York Times, uses Dragon Naturally Speaking on his laptop to write his books. So somebody better call Nuance and say, you better get some better tech support, guys. That's bizarre, and I use it on a laptop. I mean, that's just, I don't understand what they're saying. Maybe, let me call them and find out. It may not work on the particular laptop you were putting it on, but because it does, I mean, it needs a certain amount of memory and it needs a certain speed processor, but it works fine on a laptop. I don't know what they're talking. You mean a laptop computer running Windows, right?
Right.
I don't know why that's crazy.
Well, and
talk.
I don't understand computers at all.
So right. There's something going on. There's something going on there. I would go to nuance.com and look at the hardware requirements.
Okay.
I have never heard of this before. Let's see. Hardware compatibility list. Let's see. Select a product. Okay. Dragon, naturally speaking. I'm on their site right now. Select a device category. Let's see. These are microphones, recorders, sound cards, tablet PCs. It works fine on. It works on PDAs. Why would it not work on a laptop? That's very strange. I'm not sure who you were talking to or what they were.
Even the store we had gone to when we bought the laptop, they couldn't get it to download onto the laptop either. So I don't know if we had a different version of it that wasn't compatible, but they couldn't get it to work either.
Here's a laptop that's Nuance certified. Runs Microsoft Windows XP Tablet Edition model tested, 512 megs of RAM, 1.5 gigahertz Pentium M. Works fine. I don't know who you were talking to or what they're talking about. It's beyond me. I would call Nuance again. There's something missing. I'm not hearing here. When you say laptop, you mean a laptop computer running Windows XP. Yes, it should work fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1248.
Listen to KFI live online 24/7. KFI, AM640.com.
1254 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Well, I've talked with the chat room. I've looked online. I have no idea what was going on. All I can say is just lousy tech support twice. I've put a link in the show notes to a review from ZDNet on Dragon Naturally Speaking 9, which is the newest version in which they install it. Specifically, they say on their old laptop. It works fine. And I use it on a laptop. And I know many people use it on a laptop. So I'm just baffled why both a computer store and tech support would say it wouldn't work. Now, you do have to have a certain minimum amount of hardware. Not an egregious amount. 512 megs of RAM. And, they say a gigahertz Pentium M. Faster is better. More RAM is better because it will recognize faster. The real question, I think, is more to the point, is will this be a good solution for somebody who's deaf as a dictation solution? And I don't think so. I mean, I don't even recommend it, frankly, as a dictation solution for people who want to avoid typing. You have to be pretty patient. It's gotten much better. I mean, it's something like 97-98% accurate. When you train it and you use it and you correct it regularly, it gets more and more accurate. With your voice, that's the problem. It's not speaker independent. It's gotten better. You don't have to train it as much. In fact, you don't have to train it at all if you don't want to. But it does improve over time. But even if it's 98%, that means every 50th word, it'll make a mistake. And you have to say, correct that. P-R-E-S-I-D-E-N-T. And it will correct it. And that, to me, that's just annoying enough not to want to use it. We all have this dream of it's kind of Star Trek speech recognition, and we're not there yet, I'm afraid. From Vinton, Iowa, Christopher's on the line. Hello, Christopher. Welcome to KFI.
Yes. After 11 years of dial-up, we just last week got high-speed internet.
Woohoo! Yes! All right. Uh-huh. You go. It's your birthday. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Anyway, now I am wondering, are there any websites or programs I can use that'll let me check and see how well I've secured our computers and our network from the internet?
Very
from
good.
Intruders.
GRC.com.
All right.
And it's called Shields Up. And now it's not going to infect you or try to infect you. What it's going to do is going to test your firewall, which is presumably either a software firewall or better yet, a router. You have a router on there?
I have a router, and I also have software firewalls.
You don't
on
need
all
both. I'll say you don't really need both. There is an advantage, one single advantage to a software firewall. It monitors outbound connections.
Yeah.
But if you've got a problem with an outbound connection, in other words, if you have a bad guy on your system, it's too late anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and most bad guys, not most, but many bad guys now look for software firewalls and disable them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's worth the compatibility issues, the reliability issues that a software firewall causes. I think your router's fine. Really,
right.
What you need is a router, which is a good firewall, mm-hmm. Antivirus and anti-spyware software, and then you have to train yourself and others not to do dangerous things like open email attachments, click on links in email, you know, download mm-hmm. files from suspicious places, use peer-to-peer file sharing, that kind of thing. Those are really behavior is a lot of it. But GRC.com, they have a thing called Shields Up. But he's great. This is my buddy Steve Gibson. It's free. He has a number of other free programs that will also secure your system, turning off things like universal plug and play. Read up on securing your router. For instance, you want to make sure that there are a couple of things you want to do with a router. Is it wireless or wired?
It's wireless.
Okay. So the first thing you want to do is you want to change the name of the router and the most importantly, the login and password, because everybody knows the default logins for these routers.
Mm-hmm.
You also want to turn off universal plug and play, because that means a program on your computer can open holes in the router without your knowledge. That's not good. And you also want to turn on WPA. That's the only kind of wireless security that makes any difference at all. Everything else is irrelevant. Just turn on WPA.
All right.
Okay, and then GRC.com for Shields Up will tell you how secure you are and if there are issues with that. And you might use their leak test as well. That's a very useful little program. And that's it. I think you're in good shape. Sounds like you know what you're doing. Congratulations. You've entered the 21st century. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1259. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
September 17th, 2006.
KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks, it's 106. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thanks, Lisa. And good morning, or good afternoon, I guess, everybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. We are talking tech from now till 2, and of course every Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. Let's see, Jerome in Las Vegas. Hello, Jerome. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I got a question. I'm pretty good. I got a question regarding laptops. I'm
yes,
looking
sir.
To buy a new laptop, and I've been looking at the Dells. What I want to do on it, I want to do some audio and video editing using Pro Tools. I want to do a little web design. Just trying to get your opinion. What do you think?
Are you really tied, given what you want to do, are you really tied to Windows?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, what you want to do would be best done on a Mac, but if you already have Pro Tools for Windows, then maybe you don't want to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, everybody already tells me that, but I'm sort of married to Windows.
Okay, all right, married to Windows. And which Dell are you looking at?
I don't know. I've just been looking at the site and just been looking at all the different models
yeah.
they have. I'm just sort of, I've got a really old 700 megahertz right now that's just been crawling around.
Oh, yeah, years, yeah, so yeah, yeah, yeah. Time
I'm
for
looking
time,
at trying to,
time for a new one. I mean, I guess it depends
is,
on how
I
much.
I want to look.
Go ahead.
No, the thing I was looking at is I want to use it as my main computer, and I'm looking at, am I going to lose anything, laptop versus a desktop?
Right. You want a desktop replacement is kind of what you want.
Right,
and you do
right.
lose something. I'll tell you a few things you lose. First of all, expandability is limited in a laptop. You can add memory or a bigger hard drive, but that's it. You're stuck often with a video card that is not as powerful as a desktop video card. That's not usually a problem for what you want to do. It's more a problem
okay.
for gamers.
Yeah.
You also have the issue with the screen size, although you could always get a bigger screen and an external
yeah,
keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, 17s I was looking at. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people do that. They use their laptop as a desktop by docking it when they get back to home, and they dock it to a bigger screen and a keyboard and a mouse, and then you've got everything you'd have with a desktop. I would say
yeah.
If you're buying for the future and you're willing to spend a little bit of money, you probably should look at one that runs the Core 2 Duo. That's the latest laptop chip from Intel, and it's very powerful. It's dual processor, very efficient. The clock speeds are lower than what you might be used to because that's the new way Intel's going with more efficient chips that get more processing done with slower clock speeds. And by doing that, it's better for a laptop because, of course, it has uses less energy. The battery life is longer. But
oh,
now,
okay.
if you're
okay.
going to go with a Core 2, you may be spending more than you want. So you could just look at a Core Duo instead.
All right, I'm trying not to break the bank here.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. And in fact, Dell has some pretty good laptops. You know, with well, let me just look at a price point here for you. Like the I'm looking at the 1210s, which I like a lot. I think they're good laptops. Let's customize this 1210. You know, they always start at the low ball price, but let's put a Core 2 in there. They're all Core 2s. That's good. XP, gigabyte of memory. That's plenty for you. Now, a hard drive, you might want to put a little bit bigger one in there. The you know, they range from 60 gigabytes to 120 gigabytes. When you're doing music, are you going to have an external drive?
I mean, I could always get one in the future.
Yeah.
But I run out of space.
Hard drive space usually is at a premium in laptops. They're also slower in laptops than they are in desktops. They're 5,400 RPM.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
That's another compromise. But that's what they do to keep the heat down and to keep the battery life long. You're certainly going to want a CD burner. I bet you don't need a DVD burner. That'll save you some money. Just get what they call a combo drive. Lets you watch DVDs, but you don't have to make them. You're not doing video, just audio, right?
I'm looking at doing some videos. I'm looking at doing some, like, PowerPoint type of thing.
Okay, but not something you'd burn to a DVD.
No. It would only be PowerPoint, most likely.
The 1210 is a good choice for you. It starts at $1,200, and that includes a Core 2 processor. I mean, that's a pretty... And a gigabyte of RAM.
Okay.
Dell's,
are they known to have pretty good support as far as warranty and so forth?
Yeah, I like Dell. The other company that you might look at for laptops is HP Compaq. I think they do very good laptops, too. But I'm a Dell fan. Now, I should have a little disclaimer. They do advertise on my podcast network, so that's just so you know that they're an advertiser. But I've recommended Dell for years, long before they ever advertised. And, you know, they used to have better customer support than they do now. They used to be famous for their customer support. You would call somebody in Austin who would really take care of you. Now they outsource it, just like everybody else, to India. And so you get less, lower quality. Although, you know, they do have, and you can look at it when you buy it, they do have the capability of having in-home or in-office repairs and so forth. You know, you could buy additional support. So that's up to you if you want to spend the money on that. But if that's important to you, absolutely, you can get the better support. I think Dell's a good company. I've always thought they do good stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, appreciate your time.
Enjoy your new computer. That's exciting. Yeah, 700 megahertz, I think it's time. In fact, you're going to see a speed jump that isn't really appreciable in terms of the speed. I mean, you're going to go to, you know, something more than twice as fast in pure megahertz. But because it's going to dual core, and Pro Tools will take advantage of that, and probably a lot of the other software you use, you're going to see speed increases of 4, 5, 6, 7 times. It's not only a faster clock speed, it's a more efficient processor. And there's two of them. You'll see a huge improvement in speed. Huge. But remember, and sometimes people forget this, that the processor is not the only determining factor in how fast a computer is. And that's why laptops seem slower, is because they have slower hard drives. They may have slower memory, slower bus speeds on the memory, things like that. They have slower video cards. All of that also impacts the speed of the computer. So laptops tend to be a little bit slower than desktops. They just don't have the same, you know, they're trying to save juice, they're to save battery life and keep the heat down. Ralph El Toro, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I'm trying to make my decision between the regular new MacBook and the Mac Pro.
Right.
And the only thing that I need to be able to read PC software for some specialized real estate programs.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, is one going to be able to do that better than the other, or would be expandable later and do it better, or is it a wash between the two? Because the Mac Pro is about 900 to 1,000 more.
No, it's a wash because you're running MLS, things like that. Those are not demanding programs. You're not talking 3D fly-through programs for the house or something like that, are you?
No, but there are some specialized programs there, and they're always just PC-based.
Yeah, but it's like MLS. It's text, and it's, it's not, if you were using something that was graphically demanding, then the MacBook Pro would be worth it. If you're using stuff that's just basically text...
No, like, let's say, I'm still on a Pismo model.
Oh, yeah, wow. Ooh. Oh.
And so when I want to go and look at Google Earth, I've got to go to the library and that kind of stuff. So
no, Google Earth runs very well on the MacBook. All of those things run very well. Those are not demanding programs. The biggest difference between the besides screen size between the MacBook and the MacBook Pro is the video. The MacBook uses Intel's 950 GMA, and it's a motherboard video card that uses system memory, so it's much slower video than the MacBook Pro, which uses a standalone video card. However,
video, you mean something live action where it's moving. I'm not going to look and need that, but it's more like pictures of stuff.
Nah, that won't make any difference. Big difference would be in things like 3D rendering, high-end stuff. Like if you had an architectural program that was rendering.
I've seen those, and I won't need that.
No.
Is there any recommendation in terms of how much RAM and, what would be the ideal RAM for operating the Windows system?
Minimum for running Parallels. If you're running, now see, there's two different ways to run Windows. If you're running Boot Camp, where you choose on startup which operating system,
that's probably what I want to do.
Then a gigabyte's plenty, because whichever operating system's running has the full use of the memory. I use Parallels, which allows me to run both Windows and Mac simultaneously. For that, you need 2 gigabytes so that each has enough memory.
No, I'd even rather just when I turn it on decide what I'm going to do, and because
in that case,
I'll only be using that less than 5% of the time. The rest of the time, I'll just be doing my Mac.
Yeah,
stuff.
You may be surprised. You may find that it's easier to use Parallels and just have it, load it up. You don't have to reboot the machine. But in any event, if you want to use Parallels, 2 gigs. If not, 1 gig's plenty.
Okay, great.
All
and
right.
Lastly, how will they both handle the same amount of hard drive space? Because I do music, and I have over 45 gigabytes of music files already.
In both cases, you can upgrade to a 120 gig hard drive. That's what I did. You do want that 120 gig hard drive if you've got a lot of data.
Hard drive. Great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's one of the things that's really, I think, sending a lot of people in the direction of Apple. It was a very, very smart move. A move I'm ashamed to say I poo-pooed when they first did it and announced it. I said, this is terrible. By moving to the Intel chips, you can run Windows software very well on a Mac. If you run it with Boot Camp, Apple's own technology, it's just like running on a PC. It's the same. There's no difference. It is a PC. If you use Parallels, which I think is more convenient, then you have the advantage of having both running at the same time, which is what I do, and I love that. I just, it's a window. It runs a little bit slower when you do Parallels, and it requires, of course, more memory because they're both running in memory at the same time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1:17.
Information doesn't take the weekend off.
Neither do we.
KFI, all weekend long.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1. KFI is the phone number, 1-800-520-1534. Mike, Charleston, West Virginia. How you doing, Mike? I remember fond memories of visiting Charleston.
Oh, thank you, Leo, and twit-addicted fan here.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, get right to my question. I'm running Windows XP, and here the other day when I done a defrag, it done the defrag, and then it comes up with this window saying all files cannot be defragged, and I've got like this eighth of an inch red bar there.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And what do I do about it?
Nothing. Leave it. It's usually the swap file or sometimes the registry files that Windows can't safely move around. There are other defrag tools you can use that might do a better job of that, often rebooting into DOS so that Windows isn't running when it's trying to defrag. But you know what? You don't have to worry about it. It's okay.
Yeah, it's running fine.
Yeah. Defrag is often, I think, oversold as a solution to the woes of the world. All it is your disk over time gets disorganized and it just organizes things. I wouldn't do it too much anyway. You can wear out the disk a lot faster than you solve any problems. And it's mostly important if you are writing large files to your hard drive, and particularly if you're capturing video or audio where you need to keep up, you can't be waiting while the disk finds empty space, then it helps. If you've used your disk for years and it's slowing down, defrag can help. But, people who defrag every week are just wasting their time and more likely to wear out their drive, if you ask me. I would say defrag every quarter, and if there's a little bit that can't be defragged, nothing to worry about, Mike. Nothing to worry about at all.
Okay, just another quick question. On TV all the time, you see all the time they have license plates blotted out.
Yeah.
Is there a way to look up license plate numbers?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would guess it depends on the Department of Motor Vehicles in your state. Now, in the state of California, we had a very notorious stalker case where a actress, Teresa Saldana, was attacked by somebody who found her address by going to the Department of Motor Vehicles. So ever since that happened, those records have been closed.
Oh, so that's, I know everything you see on TV anymore, they never show license plates anymore.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you can see license plates driving down the street, so I'm not sure if they're just being overcautious. I mean, obviously, they're not showing anything you couldn't see anyway. And it does depend on the state. I think in some states, motor vehicle records are still public. It's a big issue. You know, if you're a private investigator, you can get California DMV records if you have a license. And there are websites online. I'm not going to give out the names. I've done so in the past to my chagrin and regret because it's been used against me. But there are databases, online databases that are, you know, will deliver a lot of personal information about you. All you need is a name. If you got a name in a city, you can usually find a person's home address. You can quickly find out how much they paid for their home. You can find out a lot of personal information. And this is a problem we have to address. You know, this much of this stuff, for instance, let's just take home sale prices. These are considered public record. And they still are in almost every county in the country. And that wasn't a problem when you had to go to the courthouse to get it. Because how many people did that? It was hard, and you'd be meeting somebody in person. You know, if you were up to something no good, at least they'd kind of remember who you were. Well, now what happens is companies go to the courthouses and the county seats, and they get these records, and they enter into online databases. They put them online, and anybody anywhere can anonymously retrieve this information in seconds. So I think our laws are outmoded. I think we need better privacy laws, better privacy protection. I think, you know, Teresa Saldana case was just the beginning. And we are really, I mean, you can find out almost anything about anybody. You don't have to be a private eye. Now, if you're a private investigator, there's no limit. You can get anything. And I've seen demonstrations. There's a very, you know, there have been famous demonstrations at the Black Hat conferences where with a minimum amount of information, something like a name and a birth date, somebody who knows what they're doing can get your social security number, every bit of information there is about you. Enough, certainly, to steal your identity. So we really, I think we need to address this. It's just too easy now because of the internet, and we really need to address it. But as of right now, in many states, I think that those motor vehicle records are public. Why? I'm not sure why they would blot out the license plates. You know, if you're watching Cops, they blot out the license plates because sometimes people presume that just because they saw you arrested on Cops that you're guilty of something. And fortunately, at least according to the legal system, you're not guilty of anything until proven so in a court of law. And that may be why the TV channels do that. 129, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Let's head to the news center and find out what Lisa Osborne has on the...
Captain Dale Dye, this evening, 5 to 7.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1:37, just a few minutes away from Dr. Dean Adell, but time to take a few more calls. Let's get them on here, with starting with D-Lan. Where are you calling from, D-Lan? Hello?
Yes.
Where are you calling from?
Oh, from L.A.
Oh, all right. It's just blank on my call screen.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I've been on hold for almost an hour.
I'm sorry. I apologize for keeping you on hold so long. What can I do for you?
No. I'm just wondering if any of the disk partition utilities, any of them have a feature to automate the process or maybe to write a script? so that I can just have...
Do you have a lot of disks to partition? Is that it, or...?
No, for my kid, I'm going to California. I want to, give them a computer. From my experience, they mess it up a lot of times. I got to, fix it a lot of times. So if I can write a script to copy the partition...
I would guess that they would because, of course, IT departments are frequently doing this. A better way to do it might be instead of do it in the partitioner is to do it in an imager, because I know you can script the imaging. So if what you're doing is setting up a system for your kid,
right?
What I would suggest doing is set it up locally yourself, and then do a disk image with Ghost or Drive Snapshot, which is my current favorite, and both of those will allow you to create a boot CD or DVD that the kid just puts in and automatically runs. It basically becomes a system recovery disk like you would get from Dell or HP. It just runs and it blasts that image onto the computer and it's done.
Okay, then the image will have to fit on a CD.
Well, no, because you can span CDs. You can also span DVDs, so it can be as large as you want.
Okay.
And all the partition information is preserved. So if you create a setup with four partitions and, applications in one and data in another and Windows in a third and all that, when you make the images, that will automatically be preserved. And those are completely scriptable because that's how they work in IT departments, if you think about it. I mean, you're not going to, if you have to set up 1,000 machines all the same, what you do is you make an image, you make one image and you blast it on those machines.
Okay.
And that's totally scriptable. You can even make an automated boot disk. If there's somebody who I'm sure that Partition Magic and Partition Manager and these other disk partition utilities can also be scripted. I would imagine. I'd be surprised if they couldn't, D-Land, but I don't know how to do it. I've never done that.
Okay.
But if somebody knows how to do that and would like to share that with us, the show notes have the comment box turned on, so you can go there, leo.am, or you can call 1-800-520-1KFI or get in the chat room.
Appreciate it. Can I ask one more question?
Sure, D-Land.
My Windows XP Home is showing me that the activation... reactivation, I guess.
I hate that. You're getting a Windows
grace period has expired. It came. It first gave me that because I have changed so much on my system, I have to activate my Windows again.
Right.
And it gave me about 5 days or so.
Right.
And the 5 days ran out. This was last week. The 5 days ran out by Monday. Since last week, Monday, it's been showing it has expired. And I've refused to turn my computer off.
Well, now here's the question. Did you change the hardware significantly?
I did not. What I did is I have one of these removable demo trays, and I back up to different hard drives, but I back up the whole system to different hard drives. Sometimes I back up just my data to a different hard drive.
Yeah.
So I've been putting in and out different hard drives.
Now that could do it, but it really the way Windows works, it does a hash of your hardware. It looks at all your hardware. I imagine it looks at things like the MAC address of your network cards, what drivers you're running, things like that. It makes a hash, a number, fairly large number that is theoretically unique to your system and systems exactly like yours. Although if it uses the MAC address, it would be in fact completely unique because MAC addresses are unique.
Right.
It sends that number to Microsoft when you authenticate, because remember, to get Windows XP running, you've got to authenticate. So you can do that online. And at that point, it matches your serial number to the hash. And then from time to time, and this is the thing that many people complain about, Windows phones home and says, here's the current hash, still matching. Well, if it changes significantly, then you're going to have the situation you have where Windows is going to say, hey, I'm not going to authenticate you. Because what they're trying to do is keep you from putting it on a different machine. So you can either authenticate again. I mean, they understand that people change hardware.
Right.
Sometimes you have to actually call Microsoft and say, look, this is what happened, and they'll authenticate it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have to talk them into it.
Yeah, I don't mind, reactivating it, but I don't know what to expect. If I turn it off and I want to turn it back on and I want to
activate. It won't run, but it'll say you better activate.
Okay,
you'll have a chance to activate. You'll always have a chance to activate.
Okay, will I have to call Microsoft?
Yeah,
you go through any hassle, you know.
You may have to call Microsoft.
Because my XP, I have the disk, is legit, but, you know.
As long as you're honest and you know you're honest and so forth, Microsoft's pretty good about this. What they're looking for and what they're really watching out for is 3,000 different machines reporting the same serial number. Then that means that somebody is pirating it. Right. And so that's what they're keeping an eye out for. If you have an authentication every few months, you know, that it's not going to be a big deal. They're not going to give you a hard time. They're usually very good and quick about it. They're just trying to watch out for the major. I mean, I'm a dead set against this. I think it's terrible. I understand why Microsoft feels that they have to do this. But, you know, I only hear from honest people like you, Dylan, who are inconvenienced by this. And you're completely honest. I don't hear from pirates saying this, and you know why? Because they just hack around it. It doesn't stop piracy. It doesn't stop piracy. It just inconveniences honest users. To me, that's a bad corporate policy. You know, I don't understand why Microsoft does it. Terry, Glendale, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm running a HP Media Center. It's about 3 years old, and I've lost the sound. And I've gone to the volume control window, and there's a window up now that says volume control. Mm-hmm. There are no active mixer devices available.
Yeah, that means you've lost the sound.
But
I'm sorry, that's mean. I shouldn't do that.
When I close the computer, I get the Windows theme coming out of the speaker.
Oh, interesting. How's that, huh? So you haven't lost the sound, you've just misplaced it. So Windows, it sounds like the driver is a little confused about what's going on.
Well, it says to install mixer devices, go to control panel, click printers and other hardware, and then click add hardware. But what hardware would I be adding?
You're at your sound card. It's probably motherboard sound, right?
What does that mean?
You don't have a separate sound card. It's actually part of the motherboard. I'm going to bet, even if you don't know, I'm going to bet that that's the case.
Is there some way I can make this reactivate?
Yeah. You have a disk that came with your computer that has the additional devices, drivers for additional devices on it. Somewhere there's a CD. And you can install the sound card from there. Probably the easiest thing to do.
But this is a software thing, not a hardware thing?
Yeah, it's software.
Okay.
I mean, it's conceivable that your hardware died, but since you're hearing sound, I think it's unlikely.
But it's only that sound.
Yeah, that
closes.
Means it's software, right? It means Windows is confused. It says, well, I don't know where to play the sound until for some reason when it shuts down, then it goes, oh, I know where to do that. So what you want to do is you want to open your system control panel, and you're going to go to the hardware tab of that, the system properties control panel, hardware tab, then click the device manager button. What this is a list of all your devices. And I bet you, if you go, you know...
Okay, I'm in there now. So which one do I click?
It's going to be sound, video, and game controllers. That's
got it. Sound and audio devices.
Yeah. Now, do you see one that has an exclamation mark or yellow or a red X through it?
Well, right now it says device volume low, so I got to move. No, that's not moving.
No, it should be... Which under there, you should see a list of devices. But what you want is you want to find the... audio driver. What I'd probably do, you know, in this case is I would just click everything underneath sound, video, and game controllers and delete it. What you're doing is you're saying, oh, I deleted all those devices and restart Windows. Windows is supposed to go and say, oh, there's new hardware there. And you'll see it do this. It'll say, oh, found this, found that, found this. And what it's going to do is reinstall those drivers. Often that'll be enough. You may need the CD that you had that came with the computer. Sometimes it says additional devices or device drivers or utilities. But there'll be a CD that... You have those CDs that came with the computer?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it'll be on there. Those are the drivers for that.
I'm looking under hardware now, and I see all these different things like HP DVD Writer 300N and then Realtek AC97 audio.
That's it, by the way.
Do you delete all those?
Just that's the one you want is Realtek AC97. That is, in fact, motherboard audio. That's the most common kind. So just delete that one. That's what's missing.
Okay, delete that.
Just click it and press the delete key, and it'll go away, and then reboot.
Okay.
And with any luck, Windows will say, oh, hey, I need to reinstall that driver, and it'll reinstall it. If it's still not working, then you might want to go online and find and type in Realtek AC97 driver and download a newer driver.
Excellent idea.
Yeah. And then that'll get you the latest driver for that, and you install that, and that'll almost undoubtedly fix it.
Okay, my other problem is I'll be searching online, and the computer's running perfectly. I'm going from page to page, no problem. And I'll go to CNN.com, search all their different stories, no problem. But if I go to one of their links, like CNN Business, the computer freezes up almost every time.
There's probably a plug-in on one of those pages that is broken on your system. Could be Java, could be Flash, could be Real Player, could be a variety of different things. So there's something on that page that is breaking your browser, and that's why it's freezing up.
Software problem again?
Yep.
Okay.
You know, if you don't have a lot of data on that system that you need, an easy way to fix all this would be just to run the recovery disks and just rebuild the whole thing.
Okay.
Windows tends to get corrupted pretty easily, to be honest with you.
All right.
And that's what's happened here in both cases. It's just, that's what happens.
All right. Thank you, Leo.
Computers are the most complicated, you're welcome, the most complicated device you have ever had in your life. Literally. More complicated than your car, your TV, your toaster, your microwave. There is nothing more complicated, I guarantee you, in your home than your personal computer. It's amazing it works at all, to be honest with you. 149, I'm not kidding, 11 away from 2. It's a miracle. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Straight Shooters, John and Ken, tomorrow 3 to 7, KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Of course, Dr. Dean's coming up in just a few minutes, and I think we've got more calls than I can get to, so maybe you'll save that for next Saturday or Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. I'm here every weekend on KFI. So, hail from Irvine. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Great.
Good. I was calling because I'm not where I am in terms of my computer knowledge, and I'd like to know if there are books, websites that I can use to broaden my computer knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is it's such a broad field. What do you know, there's sites and books that cover everything. What would you like to, what's your goal? What would you like to know? What do you think would be useful for you to know? I mean, the best way to learn about computers is to use them, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Just to be comfortable with the software and the different applications.
Yeah.
And,
is this professionally so you could get a job in it, or just because you feel like you ought to? It sounds like you're interested in it, and frankly, that's the most important factor. If you're interested in something, you're going to learn about it, right?
It feels like more kind of like I may have to use it, you know, in a future job. So it's something that I really like to have,
Do you have a computer, Suhail?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so the best thing to do is just use it. Get online. There are lots of great sites with lots of information. Of course, listening to this, I'm a little self-serving here, but listening to this show is a good start. And I think a lot of people do listen for that reason, kind of even in the background while they're shopping or in the garden or whatever, because you start to absorb the ideas and the concepts and the issues that people have with computers. And, you know, I know we do a lot of tech support on the show, but I also really try to broaden it to include, how to buy, how to understand how this stuff works. And I think that that's a good way to do it. My podcasts will give you more detail in a lot of specific areas. I do a security podcast, an internet podcast, a gadget podcast, open source biotech, a Macintosh. I got a Windows one starting up. Those are all online. Just Google TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech. And you'll find the twit.tv website. That's where everything is that I do during the week. I wish you could see my TV show, because that also would give you that effect. And then there are many good books in the bookstore. But I would say pick a specific area that you want to gain expertise in. You can overwhelm yourself by trying to learn too much too fast. If you think it's going to be at work, maybe get the software that you'd be using at a job, word processing or whatever, and start learning that. Linux is a great way to learn about computers. If you've got an old computer and you want to learn a lot about how they work, try to get Linux running on it. That by itself, it costs you nothing, but that by itself would teach you a lot. Good luck, Suhail. It's a great endeavor. Just come back next week, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. We'll talk more about it. Thank you for joining me. Dr. Dean's coming up next. Have a great week. I'm Leo LaPointe, the tech guy, on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. At 1:59, Lisa Osborne is in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of the Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.